Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome. Hey Showmance listeners out there, we hope you're staying safe and staying inside. We'd also like to say thank you to all the workers out there who can't stay in. We are thinking of you and so grateful for your service during these uncertain times. And if you are inside and looking for something to do, feel free to go back and listen to our older episodes. And thank you again for listening. We'll continue to roll out our episodes as planned until further notice. And now, on to the show.
I'm Kevin McHale.
And I'm Jenna Ushkowitz.
We became best friends on the set of Glee.
And now we're doing the Glee recap podcast you have been waiting for.
How romantic.
Each week we'll take you behind the scenes.
Spill all the Glee tea.
And break down episodes from season one with former cast, crew, producers, and writers that brought the show to life.
This is Showman's Glee Recap Edition.
I think everyone needs a little more tardy in their lives.
To Showman's Glee Recap Podcast Edition. I said it wrong. That's where we're at. That's where we're at today, you guys.
This is the podcast version.
I'm Jenna Ushkowitz.
I'm Kevin McHale.
Hi, Kevin.
And we're still in quarantine.
Here we are. Still here.
We are.
I feel like we're, you know, like week 10-ish, 10 and a half-ish, and this is when people get real, real antsy.
Oh, yeah. I look in the mirror. I don't know who I am. Like, yeah. I basically wake up, I eat breakfast, and then the sun's already going down, and I don't know. Where the day's gone. Like today I was like, oh, I gotta watch a Glee episode. It's like, how am I gonna find the time?
Like the first half I was like, I can do this, I'm gonna stay positive. And then this week I was like, it is Groundhog Day. I mean, it is Groundhog Day.
Well, it also feels especially crazy because some people are going out. So you see, like,
some states
are fully open.
Weird.
Some people in LA are just like going out.
Right.
No mask. Yes, that's judgment in my voice.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, okay, I've had a couple friends that I will not name on Instagram who have been like going to pool parties in LA. Oh, yeah. And everyone's like wasted and it's groups of like 20 or 30. I'm like, what is happening? Like, here we are. I think the difference is, I don't know, maybe this isn't the difference, but you can't forget that this is still a very real thing. We have friends who have had this. It's personal. So, like, I think if we're a little, maybe we're on the other end of the spectrum where we're being overly cautious, but this thing is no joke. So here we are.
Yeah. I think a lot of people I know and like you, like, we're just being overly cautious, which I think is the safer, you know, option for us. And so that's where I'm at with
it. It's terrifying that everybody's collective health is in the hands of one another. That's terrifying, which I think is why I'm just trying to like stay inside.
Right.
I don't trust anybody.
And here's the thing. I'm antsy and I feel sad sometimes, but I'm also like, we're fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
We're fine. And and that's the most important thing. Like,
yep.
We can do this. And I'm really honing in on my cooking skills. So
good for you.
Thanks, Kevin. But if I have to do another freaking dish, I swear to God. you know?
I mean, my big food excitement this past week was my roommate Justin went and found Dunkaroos that came back. And
I thought you got sent those. I thought Dunkaroos sent you those.
No, Dunkaroos sent Becca Tobin some Dunkaroos and some merch.
Well,
but
it's Becca Tobin.
A commoner, had to go find Dunkaroos. Well, Justin did. He left. He's like, I have a surprise. And so he went and he called in advance. He picked up outside of a 7-Eleven some Dunkaroos.
Wow.
And
curbside pickup for a Dunkaroo.
Oh, yeah.
That's respect. Man, respect.
Yeah.
Well, happy, you know, pseudo happy, healthy, and well. So here, you know, we hope everybody else is staying safe and healthy. And on that note, let's get into this crazy episode.
Episode 20, Theatricality.
Originally aired May 25th, 2010, and directed by
Ryan Murphy.
The Ryan Murphy, Lady Ryan Murphy. And then what songs, Kevin?
We have Funny Girl, Bad Romance, Shout It Out Loud, Beth, and Poker Face.
Where do we begin?
Well, you and I were really looking forward to this episode.
I was really looking forward to this episode. To then be a little confused by it. I didn't feel what I thought I was going to feel. It just didn't have the same effect that I remember it having. And maybe it was because we were shooting it that I felt like when we were shooting it, we had a bit more fun with it. But this one didn't really hit me as hard as I thought it would. I do think that the Kurt Finn storyline definitely was the strongest storyline in this. Strange but nice arc for Finn with his redeeming moment at the end that I loved. But I don't know. I didn't fully understand what the message was. Like, normally I feel like in the show, you're like, oh, it's clear what they're trying to teach us in this episode or right. share with us the message. And this was just was like, I was like grasping for something. I was like,
It's sort of, I feel like it's indicative when like the writers throw in something to sort of articulate that for the viewer. Like
in Mr. Shu at the end.
Mr. Shu, and we're like, we're waiting.
The message.
Yeah, we're like, what is the lesson here? And he's like, I was like, oh, okay, here. And it didn't end with a performance like it usually does.
Right.
It ended with a really great scene.
Right,
felt differently too.
Totally, totally.
But I did really enjoy Tina getting something. I mean, it was like a little nugget, but it was something that you weren't immediately tied. Your story was not tied to Artie. Got your own. And I really think I don't know if you agree with this, but it's fun to see Tina go goth, like full goth, and like lean into that. And probably wasn't comfortable to wear. But yeah. As a viewer, I loved seeing Tina break out. And then when you were in your sweatshirt, it was also very funny.
Yeah, we get there. I mean, it's funny because I remember Lou Eirich, our costume designer, was like, we have to go a bit more extreme in terms of your goth look for this first scene in Figgins' office. And in order to, you know, get the gag of it. And the dark lipstick and everything. And it's really fun. I mean, that tiny little top hat was my favorite. And I think he gave it to me. So I had it at one point in my Jenna collection. But anyway, I thought it was really fun. It was fun for me to actually wear a sweatshirt or no makeup. Also, like, that was a dream come true. But I liked that little storyline. And at the end, the scene when she talks about, when she scares Figgins is...
it's so good.
I remember shooting that scene, and it was so much fun. And I have a fun little tidbit about that scene that I will share as well. Yeah, so that was fun for Tina. Like, I was like, ooh, this is exciting. Tina gets a little, you know, a little side storyline, and it, you know, it leads into the bigger, you know, Gaga.
Yes.
I don't know, externally expressing yourself, but then really at the root of like expressing your own internal, I don't know. I think maybe I'm trying to dig too deep into this.
It's fun. It's a fun episode. I mean, sort of. I mean, it's serious topics. That's the thing. You have the storyline of just dressing up and being crazy and theatrical. And then you have Shelby sort of voicing like, no, that's not what it's really about. And then you have the whole mother-daughter thing, and then you have the parental thing with Puck and Quinn, and then you have another serious storyline with. I mean, there's so many serious storylines, so maybe they needed the Gaga of it all to sort of offset the heaviness of everything else that was going on.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Also, like, Gaga is just great. And it's great.
Wow, we were so thrilled.
Oh, yeah. You had to... All I remember personally from shooting this episode...
is my bubbles?
You sitting in those loud-ass plastic bubbles. And it was so uncomfortable for you.
Yeah.
I just remember you couldn't sit in your regular cast chair. Like, you're always sitting on the edge of a stool.
Yeah, exactly. Good memory. So before we get into, like, the full episode, like... The costumes were handmade for us, especially mine. Like, but Heather's like lobster glasses, like these are all like handmade for us and specifically designed for each cast member. And my bubbles were actually hard plastic. And the thing was, they were strung on and stitched on with string onto a leotard that like zipped up in the back that they cut and made a zipper of. So to get into this thing was like a whole other beast. But once you got it on, the bubbles, when they didn't think about this, were part plastic. Then when they bounced and like touched, rubbed against each other, they made sounds like almost like Christmas ornaments hitting together. And I remember one choir room scene when Tina's sitting next to Kurt, sitting on the edge of a stool, and sound department, you know, they were amazing. Like, we never had to do any outside external work on sound, which most TV shows every episode have to do, like ADR. And like, we didn't have to do any of that really ever. So they were really amazing. But this episode, Phil kept running in and being like, "I'm so sorry. What is that sound? We are getting weird sounds." And I'm like, "I'm breathing. I'm literally breathing." Every time I would take a breath in, the bubbles would screech together and they would like clink. And then when I breathed out, exhaled, they again would clink together. And so in the scene when Tina and Kurt are coming down the stairs and Karofsky and Nazemia are coming at them, you can hear the bubbles clinking. And that's like the sound that, and they just couldn't avoid that. Like, normally they'd be like, "Oh, let's put rubber on your shoes so that your shoes don't, you know, make a clack clack sound." But that was not the case.
They would have to put rubber on every single bubble.
And also, fun fact, they also, the bubbles were only stitched on by like fishing line, and they would and it would break. And so all throughout the shooting of Bad Rome, you can actually see in one of the in like a part of the number that there's just balls rolling on the rafters.
I remember towards the end of that number, you were just like, the look in your face was, "Fuck it." And you're like, "How many balls can I make fall off this time?"
Honestly, because they just had to stop in between every take and reset us and restitch my balls on. Yeah, they had to restitch my balls on, people.
Yep.
And they finally figured it out during the tour, because that number, Bad Romance, is so like, it's just all I think about when I watch it is Tour. It's so reminiscent of that, of the first Tour.
I mean, the number's the exact same.
Yeah.
What it looked like on Tour and what it looks like
they
in the
definitely
shows.
Reinforced my bubbles for Tour. But I did lose some bubbles on Tour, though. Oh, I think I remember one night on Tour when we did Bad Romance and a bubble fell off, and I was so scared that somebody was going to trip on it because they're translucent.
Oh,
and I stopped in the middle and like kneeled down and like crawled to get it, because I was just so worried that like Diana Agron was going to slip on one of the balls. Not that, but anyway, that number was really, really fun to shoot.
Showmance is supported by LaCroix Sparkling Water, which delivers refreshment, flavor, and sparkle, Jenna, the best part, with an innocent twist of zero calories, zero sweeteners, and zero sodium.
And there are 27 LaCroix flavors, and the newest additions to the family are Limoncello and Pastèque. With European finesse and unique flavor innovation, our exciting new Limoncello and Pastèque are joining the LaCroix family of flavors. Kevin, Limoncello, you can sip, savor, and it's pure joy in every Limoncello LaCroix. And for the Pastèque, which is just in time for summer, you can enjoy LaCroix's newest refreshing flavor, which is French for watermelon, if you didn't know.
Oh, my favorite. LaCroix sparkling waters are gluten-free, vegan, kosher, and non-GMO, Whole30 approved, and environmentally friendly. LaCroix cans are sustainable and recyclable, and they're the first on the market to be produced without BPA liner. Enjoy LaCroix sparkling water, a healthy alternative for you and your lifestyle.
We love LaCroix! I have been drinking a lot of tangerine and berry while I've been home. We absolutely love LaCroix.
I've gone through 2 packs of tangerine in the past week.
LaCroix sparkling water is available nationwide. So for a full list of retailers, visit LaCroixWater.com. So for more information, join the LaCroix community on social at LaCroix Water. Hey, you guys. So our friends over at the Lady Gang podcast have written a new book, and it is on sale now.
Act Like a Lady, Questionable Advice, Ridiculous Opinions, and Humiliating Tales from 3 Undignified Women is available wherever books are sold.
Act Like a Lady is part memoir, part self-help book with all the sass and humor of the hit podcast. The book is broken down into 4 sections: your relationship with your lover, self, friends, and career.
And it features hilarious advice and essays from the hosts of Lady Gang, Kelty, Becca, Becca and Jack, as well as illustrations, manifest lists, connect the dots, and a dictionary of words that they completely made up.
The Lady Gang has your back with essays like Maybe She's Born With It, Maybe It's Photoshop, and If You're Happy and You Know It, Thank Your Ex.
Act Like a Lady is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, or wherever you get your books. I did try on Naya's outfit at some point.
No, you did not.
I did. I might have a picture of it, or I have to text her that we tried on each other's outfit.
Stop.
I fit into her tiny little. I was skinny at the time, and
tiny.
Yeah,
you are still teeny tiny.
And yeah, we went into rooms, and I mean, I looked disgusting, but I did try it on.
Oh no!
I think I also. The boys, we had these gigantic platforms shoes, and I totally rolled my ankle at some point.
Well, that's my question. Number one, the kiss, when you guys came out of the makeup trailer for the first time, all done, like in that face paint and those outfits, I was genuinely scared. Genuinely scared. It was amazing, though. And also, Chris's shoes.
Oh, my God.
That they made to look like Gaga's were really that high. I mean, they were like three. I think they made them shorter than what Gaga usually wears, but like, I think they were like 2 feet tall.
Yeah, I don't know how he did that.
And he did the whole freaking number that way.
Yeah, of course he did. Didn't even flinch.
I was so scared for his ankles.
Ugh.
And I just remember being like, we were in those costumes
for an eternity.
Episode. I mean, even when like Kiss was performing, we were in our outfits. Like, it's just, it was like, oh, it was a lot of costumes and makeup.
Really wild. But I guess it's like, if you're gonna build them, you might as well use them. I do remember I have really strong memories of us just getting ready in the morning, and like we'd be in our regular street clothes but have like Kiss makeup.
Yeah, you had to do that a lot. How long did that makeup take? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Maybe
definitely
it took
not
like
as long as your zombie makeup.
Absolutely not. It was a fraction of the time. But
yeah, I mean, it's face paint basically. Yeah.
But it was everybody looked so good. I just remember when you guys. And the ladies had him on for the first time, and Chris, like, coming out of the trailers, we got so excited. We're like, yeah, you look so good!
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Kruger and Stacey Black were amazing, and this is, like, one of the first times they really, really, really got to play with us, you know, for a whole episode, so.
It's, like, the finest work of hair, makeup, and costuming.
Oof, those
firing wigs. On all cylinders.
Those wigs. All right, so... We get New Directions gets assigned Gaga after finding out that Vocal Adrenaline is doing Gaga as well, which I love the red Chantilly lace.
So scene. Good.
I thought it was just so funny. Whenever Ryan directs, the pacing is always just right.
This is also when I didn't know the word homage. And this is how Kevin. I remembered that Ryan was directing, because the first take, I go... Something about like, homage. Yes, I pay. Yeah, it's like they're playing homage to blah, blah, blah. And he comes up to me, he's like, Kevin, it's homage. And I just remember being so embarrassed. Also, later in the episode, I say, way to bury the lead. Had never heard that phrase either.
No, Kevin, no.
Yep.
I'm embarrassed for you.
Yep. I was 20.
I'm just kidding.
I had uncultured swine.
That's really funny. Which storyline should we follow first?
Well, I think let's go with Rachel, because she storms in. She's the one that tells us about Vocal Adrenaline. And I sort of, like, we always would love when she would come in and talk really quickly and, like, make her talk even faster. And that's, I remember that distinctly from this episode. Like, hey, guys.
I know. I was, like, stressed out watching that.
Yep. But I love the whole, they go back to Vocal Adrenaline to spy.
So cute.
Shelby gives that little speech about what theatricality really is, and then she's like, oh my God, it's my mom, because she's singing and I recognize her from the tape.
I mean, look at them. It's crazy. And I wonder if they had that planned already, or if they, when Dina got to set, they were like, holy shit, like, she has to be her bio mom.
I think they had that planned once they cast Dina. I feel like that was the end game for having Dina on the show.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
Right? It had to be.
Yeah.
And that number she did was so great.
Oh, so good.
I was like, damn, girl.
I mean, you know, like dealing with a complicated relationship, it was nice to give Adina some more stuff to play with, because you see her episodes before making this, putting this into motion of trying to connect with Rachel. And then once it actually happens, she sort of gets cold feet or realizing maybe I can't do this. And it was nice to have her. It just created a lot of good opportunities for the scene with Will and Shelby, of him talking her through it. And then ultimately leading to one of my favorite songs ever in Glee.
For real?
Poker Face is up there.
Wow, Kevin.
Oh, it's probably top five with the House Is Not a Home mashup. Yeah, it's one I legitimately listened to and got very excited.
I'm not shocked, because I won't put that on. Like, I won't play. That's not one of my go-to, like, you know, revisits. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is really, really good. Like, I forgot about how good they sound together, and how, like, and all of their arrangements are really well done. And, I loved Poker Face. I think I'd prefer to listen to it than watch it.
Yeah. Well,
just a weird scenario.
Yes. So the interesting thing to me is that because I have just been listening to it for 10 years or something, watching it again, remembering the storyline, and like, you have the comedic beats where she's like, Brad, get in here. And he comes, just shows up out of nowhere.
So funny.
Which is great. And then at first I was sort of thrown by, you know, like, the Rachel of it all, where she goes into performance mode and Adina is still sort of playing like, what's going on? Like, what are we doing? Do I actually want this? Right. And it was nice to see sort of, and I feel like that is Ryan's directing, where you have, even within the song, like this whole arc of like, okay, we're trying this. We can be friends and acknowledge each other's presence. And then it's like, oh no, this is actually, we're really good together. Like, this is fun. We're bonding. And then like, oh, reality's hitting.
Right.
And this is sort of sad and hard. And that was all within, what, 2 minutes?
A whole journey. Wow.
Yeah. And so it was really nice to be able to actually watch that. And it's one of those moments where this is why music and performing a song can a lot of times display emotions and feelings and story so much more succinctly than a regular just dialogue scene. Yeah. And using a song like Poker Face, which has sort of super absurd lyrics, and you're still getting this super serious storyline across, I thought was really like a very good, delicate balancing act that I thought they nailed.
Yeah, no, I totally thought they nailed. I have to say, like, you know, we've been talking about this arc, obviously, for the last couple of episodes. And when, you know, Jesse St. James tries to get her to play the tape and Rachel's not ready, like, I think they really did handle this storyline very well. Like, I don't know. I really liked that moment when Rachel comes in with her new costume that Shelby helped her make. And she's like, yeah, my mom helped me make it. And then we pan to, you know, Mr. Shu, that's like genuinely worried about Rachel getting hurt. I loved those beats, and I loved this storyline, and I thought they handled it really, really well, because it could have just been totally washed over, but they chose to make it a bit more challenging for her, for Rachel at least. And I like that. I like that a lot. So
especially in a show where everything's over the top, right. Like, it's nice for those moments, like you pointed out, where you just see a look in Schuster's face.
Right.
Or, and you don't have to sort of be so heavy handed about it. And it is nice that there is that balance within the show as we're doing something as wild as Gaga.
Right. Okay, cool. So Tina gets stripped of her, literally stripped of her goth look. I loved that. I thought it was just fun for me to play. I don't know if it was as fun for everybody to watch, but
it was
really, really fun. I remember even when we were shooting the sweatshirt scene, Ryan being like, no makeup, Jenna. And I was like, Aaron didn't put any makeup on. He's like, ugh, what it's like to be young.
You did look good.
And like the thing is, like, I mean, I was 20 something, you know, but the funny thing is, like, you hadn't seen Tina stripped without a buttload of makeup on her face.
It's true. Ever.
So that
it was weird. I was like, yeah, oh, there's Jenna.
Jenna. Yeah, exactly. But more importantly, Tina gets her bop back when she, you know, finds theatricality in getting threatening Figgins with his fear of vampires, which I love when Tina's like, I think he thinks vampires are real. and I got my own personal teeth, vampire teeth.
That's right.
So Art, this amazing guy who does all, like, you know, fake braces and fake teeth for all the shows, came to my house. He took the mold of my teeth and he came back and brought me my really cool vampire teeth. There's just two teeth like attached to like a wire that you see on a retainer, and like it went behind my two front teeth. And they're like, you can keep these. And I was like, that's awesome. So I just found them recently and I was like stoked. I was like, you guys, I still have Tina teeth. This is going to be a great Instagram story. It's like I'm on the Vampire Diaries. And I tried to put them in and forgot that I had done Invisalign. So they don't fit anymore.
You got those straight teeth now.
They don't fit no mo. So I had to get rid of them because that's just weird to hang on to fake teeth like that. But that was really, really fun. And it was just like, I love those like little special effects because like we didn't get any of that stuff.
True.
On our show. But when we were shooting that scene, it was late at night and we were the last ones because a lot of the time they leave those like two-person scenes for the end of the day or the top of the day. So I was shooting with Iqbal, who is amazing, and he's so nice and he just wanted to be there all the time. Like Jane said, you know, like they didn't get to do the stuff we did and I was like, well, I'll trade with you any day. But he came in and he was like singing some of the songs we had just done, and Iqbal's amazing. So
sweetest man.
He loves to like play on set and he was trying all these different things as he like turned the corner to see Tina as a vampire. And there was one take where he comes around and he's turning the corner and he goes, Nosferatu!
I remember you
talking. And I fucking lost it. It's just so, his reactions of being scared of me was so, so funny.
He's so good.
I love that scene. And I think that was one of my favorite, actually really funny quote too. Like Tina had some really good quotes this episode. She's like, you're going to let me wear my lady demon clothes or my dad will fly into your bedroom and bite your face.
So good.
What? Anyway, moving on. Really, really fun to play. And as we know, Tina didn't get a ton of storyline. So anything, I was like, woo!
Also like playing off the whole like Twilight craze.
Yes. Yes.
Great. So like, leaning into that.
Support for today's episode comes from Progressive Insurance. Fun fact, Progressive customers qualify for an average of 6 discounts when they sign up for Progressive Auto Insurance. Discounts for things like enrolling in automatic payments, insuring more than one car, going paperless, and of course, being a safe driver. Plus, customers who bundle their auto with home or add renter's insurance save an average of 12% on their auto.
There are so many ways to save when you switch, and once you're a customer with Progressive, you get unmatched claim service with 24/7 support online or by phone. It's no wonder why more than 20 million drivers trust Progressive and why they've recently climbed to the third largest auto insurer in the country. Get a quote online at progressive.com in as little as 5 minutes and see how much you could be saving.
Auto insurance from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Home and renter's insurance not available in all states, provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party insurers. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations.
Where are the cameras?
Run for the hills.
So much going on. It's just like a whirlwind.
It's the Spidey Podcast with Spencer and Heidi Pratt.
Heidi said we can't join the sex club. We can't join Scientology either.
Hey, how about some other clubs?
Oi, Illuminati, where are you? Shout out the U.S. government. Thanks for making the roads so nice.
Can we just get gay for 2 seconds?
I didn't know you turned it off.
Get new episodes every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It makes me so happy.
And then Tina also has this other, you know, storyline with Kurt that leads into like the Kurt and Finn, the most heavy storyline, I'd say. But this is the start of like the real Kurofsky bullying.
Yes. And we finally get to see Azemio and Kurofsky really being the monsters that they are. And that being said, Azemio, he is my favorite line of the entire...
James Earl.
Yes, it's my favorite line of the entire show episode.
Well, some of these were a little... They'd gone a little too far and would definitely not...
Absolutely. I like it because it's so inappropriate.
Right, being theatrical
doesn't make you versatile. It just makes you bisexual.
It's pretty wild.
But it's like, that is like a dude thing. Like, I grew up in Texas.
You've got a bad case of the gay.
Yeah, like that. Like, those are things that I grew up not hearing about me, but people saying, and you don't really like bat an eye at it because you don't realize that that's a horrible thing to be saying to somebody.
Right.
And knowing what happens at the end of the episode, it sort of makes it worth it.
I think that this whole Kurofsky thing and Azemio thing, pushing Kurt to be bullied and then taking it out on Finn, like, you really need that push in order to get Finn to where he needs to be to say all those things to Kurt.
Yeah.
You know, I think the buildup of him just losing, like being told he has to dress up like Gaga, you know, in Gaga outfits. And then, you know, saying that Glee Club is he's got a bad case of the gay, and like all those things, like, really had to push the most beloved character on the show to say those things that he dares to say, you know what I mean?
And because of that, I thought it was like expertly written and expertly performed by Corey, where you can see all of that happening really subtly within each scene. Right. And like, you feel that, like, you can literally feel, I feel like Finn's uncomfortability is palpable as the scenes progress throughout the episode, because having his friend, well, quote unquote friends or like jock buddies, like, push him like that. We're like, this is a kid who's been comfortable. Yeah. Like, he's gotten into the Glee Club. Like, it's fine. Everything's fine. And then now they're doing something he might actually do. But because the other people are walking around the school dressed like that, now it's, you know, caused people to look at him. And it is really nice when you do have that other perspective that is sort of the toxic masculinity of Azemio and Kurofsky, balanced by Finn, who, like, Finn is figuring out his adolescence, where it's like he is a guy who doesn't have toxic masculinity, but he's susceptible to it because that's what he's surrounded by.
Of course.
And it's nice to be able to like walk in between those worlds and see him try to navigate it. And ultimately it's like, okay, he's still the guy that we love.
Right.
And he's not falling into that. And I did think it's really natural, and probably he evolved a lot quicker than most 16-year-olds
of course.
on the subject.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, after being reamed out by Bert and, you know, really being taught a lesson, you know, I think I bought it.
Totally.
But yeah, you're right. And I do think that the other perspective is like, when we look at why Glee was so widely received by the underdogs who felt like they were finally being seen, this is when we really get into the down and dirty of it, because there were real bullies, like, and still are bullies like this, and they exist and they're real. And to just show the one side of like this, you know, everything's hunky dory and we may be bully, but like, we're not going to see it. That doesn't lend to like what these kids need. And so to see it from, again, like the audience perspective, like we've been able to do, I now understand more why people really grasped onto this. I mean, even Chris Colfer, who would say in many interviews, he was from a small town in California and it was, you know, was bullied his entire upbringing and time in school. So I just think it's necessary and relatable. And I really applaud the writers and obviously our Holy Trinity for doing that. And, you know, we owe a lot of that of the show's success to that, you know what I mean? And raising the bar and actually having the hard conversations.
And I think that's why it was important for Ryan to, I don't know why he directed this episode, but I feel like pulling off the scene in the basement where Kurt reveals the room makeover to Finn.
Yeah.
And Finn goes off on him about knowing that Kurt has had a crush on him, that he's been trying to downplay it and trying to ignore it, and then goes off and uses the F word.
Right.
And I think it's important to say that word in this scene. And he says it a couple times, and then Bert storms down the stairs, and then he says it. Mm-hmm. And that is why Ryan's perspective and having someone like Brad, who was very Brad Falchuk, who's very much the antithesis in terms of Brad, like, loves Bruce Springsteen. He wears flannel and cargo pants every day.
Like, he's like the Finn, but yes, he is. You know, and then we've got Ryan, who's like the Kurt.
And then you have them coming together through Bert.
Right.
And Bert voicing what should actually be happening. Like, what do, in a dream world, what do we want to be hearing? What should people actually be saying, ideally?
Right.
And it was so good, so well acted, so well written, so well directed. And we talked it, when Michael Malley was on, he talked about the scene, but we cut it because we wanted to save it for this episode.
Right.
So we will play his thoughts about it, because it's really beautiful.
The one ad lib that Ryan let me do, but then he made the ad lib even better, was at the end of when Kurt had dressed up the basement to look like a
such a heartbreaking episode.
And Finn used the word faggy, and I came downstairs and snapped, and the place does look like it, like like some out of Lawrence of Arabia. You know what I mean? It was like a harem. It was like a harem. Not a harem. It looked like wherever a harem is, that's what it looked like. It was directed like, I don't even know where they are. But anyways, I remember the one ad lib that I put in. But I usually we would do it during rehearsal, and then I'd ask if I could do it. I would never add a line in a scene while we were rolling without getting prior approval, because that just drive the showrunner crazy. But in the rehearsal, I said to Ryan, can I just say, place looks great. and so, you know what I mean? After all this scene where I've just kicked my fiance's son out of the house for basically describing him as one of the most horrible people to describe the, the love den as I was just like, place looks great. Don't let anybody say anything about your place, Kurt. Place looks great. No son of mine. I mean, it looked great to who? Not to Bert, certainly. But then Ryan, he's like, when you go out, put your hand on his shoulder. Like, he added that. And that made the scene. So I don't think that he's so little. That would have been something.
It feels like something Brad would have come up with on the day and said, add that in. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like a Brad, like a last minute thing.
And oftentimes in one of those two where they're like seeing you watch it.
Yeah.
That's one of those opportunities where you're like, let's try.
Yeah. That's what I liked, having like the Holy Trinity on set, like directing or at any point, because like they could help us rewrite. They could help us add things in that would make it work, because we were all kind of still figuring out.
It happened with us during a scene where Ryan.
So many, yeah.
I wanted to talk, but like he came in one time, we're doing a scene, and he's like, no, this doesn't work.
Right.
And he was right, because the circumstances for which the scene was supposed to take place didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, we were supposed to be doing some business or activity that we could not do in the choir room.
Right.
And he's like, this scene, that's like one of those things. We're like, okay, well, I'm
paying. Who wrote this?
Yeah. He's like, this, I thought this was a good idea. And then within 30 seconds, he's like,
I remember this.
This is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And he's like, Kevin, you're going to say this. Jenna, you're going to say this. Then you're going to go over to the piano. And then you're going to say this. You're going to say this. And then it became a 100% different scene that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is a really great scene now. You just made like a filler-ish scene beautifully right. emotional. I'm like, yeah. okay. Mm-hmm. And they could just do that.
Mm-hmm. All three of those guys are just so funny, too. Mm-hmm. And if they were right. sitting there and they came up with the better line, it was a very dynamic process. They right. just add it right there.
Yeah.
Right. Ugh, I miss Mike.
I love him. I mean, he's in Snowpiercer on TNT. You should watch
yes.
it.
Yes. Oh, good, good, good.
But also,
he's
it's
just doing it all.
It's not. It's nice that like Ryan would allow him to right. improv because like trust.
Well, Mike.
Him
Mike of all of it, people is the most respectful of writers' words because he's a writer and showrunner himself, and so you know he would obviously never do anything without. Like he is just super, super meticulous about and respectful yep. of that.
Oh, the but, hand. The hand on the shoulder.
I can't, Kevin. I want that one touch. I mean, not a freaking word was said and I lost it. I mean, ooh. I lost it. That scene though, it's a really tough scene and I can't imagine them taking, especially Corey and Mike and Chris, like the three of them are some of the best actors on the show yes. and the most mindful in rehearsals and really a wealth, you know, like they really
they're very serious time. Actors.
Yeah. On the day, they're just very mindful about every intention and every word that they're saying. And so I can imagine what that scene was like with Chris, Corey, Michael Malley, and Ryan Murphy in that room. Like, mm-hmm. I wish I was there. But I do very vividly remember watching this episode at lunch when they played it for the cast and crew at lunch on the lot in between
yep.
Shooting and watching that scene, like literally like hand to over my mouth, like, so nervous, so emotional, but also like, God damn, that was a good scene. I thought that was the pinnacle of the episode, you know, the pinnacle scene of the episode.
Totally. I think to me, this episode was about getting to that scene and Poker Face.
For sure. And then Finn, and then the very last scene when Finn's in yes. the shower curtain, which I also was like, Finn, very pre-American Horror Story.
Yes, exactly.
But I love that. That I was like, I forgot about that scene. And when he yep. showed up, I burst out into tears again. And I was like, that's right. That's why we did that.
Yeah, it's again, that scene, you know, when Bert is going after Finn and being like, I thought you were different.
Right.
Or knew better. And
yeah.
And his reaction, he wasn't mad. He wasn't angry. Finn was realizing that he was disappointed in himself.
Right.
More than Bert was. And you're like, there he is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly. And Bert too, like I just appreciated the writing of like, you don't think I said that when I was a kid? You don't think I used those words? Like, I thought that was really powerful. It just allowed Bert to have more of a right to be there, you know?
Yeah. And it made it okay for all those people who didn't know any better, who now know better.
Right.
Where it's, you're allowed to evolve on a situation. It's the yeah. opposite of like cancel culture, where it's like if we were young and did something that we now know with experience mm-hmm. that were completely wrong, and to be able to have somebody stand up and tell you that because they've been in your shoes is invaluable. And
totally.
It was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my, I mean, I guess we say that's MVP of the storyline of the episode, but yeah, it was a weird overall. Like I thought it was a more streamlined episode and yet I was like, this is weird, but I still enjoyed it.
You know what I think it was? It's like, we've talked about it where there's just episodes that are really fun, but they don't really have anything to do with the overall storyline of the show. Mm-hmm. This yeah. had things that needed to be done and said that did have ramifications of the overall story, but also tried to like shoehorn in the Gaga thing of it all. So it was like a weird combo of, I don't think it totally worked, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really matter when you get to that scene. Because okay. that makes it worth it, I guess.
Well, all right. So on the tardy meter, I've made up a new word. On the tardy meter from 1 to 5, what do you rate this episode?
Ooh. The episode as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe a 3.
Yeah, I give it a 3.5.
But that scene is a 5.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. And poker face too.
And I really did forget about that scene. And when Mike O'Malley talked to us about it, I was like, oh, yeah. And it was really good to be able to watch it again because it's a masterclass in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's where everything works perfectly.
Right.
Acting, writing, set deck, everything is working.
It's such a shame we didn't get to work with Adina more.
It's true. I did get to hang out with her.
And she would always be in the trailers and like she would bring her little kid along. And, she had just had her kid and she was just getting back into the swing of things. And I was like totally starstruck because like, you know, Adina.
So Steve had a question about Shout It Out Loud. What size were the shoes? I have no idea. They were gigantic. But why did we do Shout It Out Loud of all Kiss songs? That seems like...
That's a good question.
It's a really... random.
It was the cheapest.
At the time, my boyfriend was a huge Kiss fan. He's from Brazil. They're big in Brazil.
Mm.
And I was so excited to tell him we were doing two Kiss songs. And then he was like, Beth, and Shout It Out Loud? So, yeah, I don't know. I've never heard either of these songs, but here we are.
Yeah, like, why didn't we do, like, Rock and Roll All Night or something like that? I don't know. That's a really good question, though, because...
This is very strange. Brad also texted me and said, did you ever wish Artie was gay? And then we were watching the episode today, and my roommate was like, did you wish you were doing Gaga with the girls? And I was like,
yes. I literally wrote that down, Kevin, in the document. I said, I said, Kevin, would you rather have done Gaga? And I'm
are
like,
are you kidding me?
I'm pretty sure on set you were like, I would have rather done this.
Why do you think I put on Naya's costume? I learned all the choreography. Like on tour, I would be doing it on the side of the stage.
I remember rehearsing for Bad Romance and being like so stoked we were doing that number. Obviously we get to do a million other Gaga songs after this, but like this one popped the Gaga cherry and I was thrilled.
So much fun.
Yeah, it's the best.
That was one of the first ones where I was like, oh, I wish I could do that.
I remember you learning the number with us. Yeah, that one I definitely is just, I'm sense memory. It's like I hear Bad Romance and I go back to the tour.
Yep. Right. I did do that drunkenly at a club a couple months ago.
Bad Romance?
Yeah, it came on. I was like, do I still remember this choreography?
Our number or her version?
Well, it's almost the same choreography.
No, I mean the song, which come on.
Oh, no. It was her version.
Oh, damn it.
But I only know the dance because...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very, very similar. Okay, Kevin, I think it's time for...
Week of the Week!
Hi guys, this is Mariah. I'm from Louisiana. I never expected how much Glee has turned out to mean to me. When I started watching in 2010, I was in my sophomore year of high school. I hadn't even come out to myself yet. I'm non-binary and bisexual, and I didn't know any of that about myself. I just knew that I was struggling, and I didn't feel like other people felt. And Glee really carried me through a lot of stuff in high school. And beyond, I started my Glee rewatch before I even found out that you guys were doing this recap podcast. And I immediately subscribed and started listening. And it's just been such a joy to hear the behind the scenes. I just wanted to thank you guys for all that you've done for me in my personal life and for my entertainment. Thank you so, so much. Bye.
Mariah! Amazing.
I mean,
it was really sweet.
So sweet. And what a formative time in your life to be watching a show talking about all these things that people don't talk about.
Right. And I'm so glad that Glee had that impact on your life and gave you that, I don't know, insight and strength. But we're very grateful.
She's part of the fam.
Yeah. Mariah, your Gleek of the Week.
Woo!
Okay. Well, Kevin, we are getting to the end of our full season one. Isn't that crazy?
I'm more shocked that the penultimate episode of the season is funk.
Maybe we'll be surprised.
Yeah, maybe. Because if we've learned anything, Jenna, in 20 episodes, is that the episodes we remember remember loving are the ones that we've been happily surprised by.
That's right. Okay, so we're so grateful that you all have been listening and enjoying this and keeping you guys busy during quarantine. And I can't wait to finish out season one.
We got 10 million downloads last week, thanks to you guys.
I know. So you guys are...
Keep it going. On to 20 million.
And maybe we'll do season two for you then.
Oh, maybe.
No, we're going to keep going. I know you guys keep asking. So we're just going to keep going. We're having so much fun. And we hope you're having as much fun as we are entertaining ourselves. Thank you. Thank you. And go watch Funk for next week's Glee Cap. And let us know what you think.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Showman's Glee Recap Edition.
Get new episodes every Thursday on Spotify, PodcastOne.com, and Apple Podcasts.
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jenna Ushkowitz.
Follow me on Instagram at Kevin McHale and on Twitter at Druidude.
Subscribe to the show.
Leave a nice rating.
And a 5-star review.
And spread the word.
See you next week.
Bye.